email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 5 on 5 on ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon, Darrow O'Brien.
Good afternoon. I know where Athlone is. I know what county.
Congratulations, you've got your job.
I have got my job. Now,
before we get to that, because I just heard Jennifer Zamparelli advertising Home Advantage, which is a new family quiz show.
Okay.
And of course, you've been there. You were that soldier, family quiz show soldier.
I was, and it was fondly remembered. In fact, I think it turned up on what show is not reeling, but one of those shows where somebody goes through the archives, and there was a genuine astonishment of me standing next to a giant cardboard robot, and you fed the paper in, and it was a clever reveal, and then the colours came out, and they won, and they lost. Jesus!
Was it a real robot, Dara?
It wasn't a real robot. No, in fact, the shredder inside, it was very much. Just the shredder is the only moving part in the robot. But they came out to Led Zeppelin. Dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun, and then the robot would come out. And then you'd either give a family a car or not give them a car. And I discovered, I think as other comics have discovered, there is no funny way to not give a family a car. There is no arch ironic kind of detached way to break the hearts of a family from Athlone. you have to do straight. And then
how many seasons did it run for?
2 whole seasons, my friend.
Right.
2. And then I emigrated.
But come here. Like, you know, it's on your CV. It's an experience that served you well. You went on to do blockbusters.
Its huge advantage was that I made it with a guy called Seamus Cassidy, and then we went on and made the panel.
Ah, there you go.
So that was a huge bonus of it. And I think the two of us went, let's find something we want to do. So it was good fun. And actually, the crew we worked on, we were all in our 20s. It was great fun. So it was like a really positive memory. But the memories of making the show are significantly more positive than the show itself. by series two, we were doing them in Spanish. We were pushing the format. In ways that it didn't really merit.
You nearly mentioned Reeling in the Ears there. Have you ever featured on Reeling in the Ears?
No, I Reeling in the Ears reached my reign of terror yet. No, it's in the 2010s. I don't think I've ever done anything that quite is substantial enough to merit it.
Right.
I don't think they go. There wasn't an episode where they went, but Echo Island, and then the music plays.
They missed out there. Because
you know what? It's a large part of people's cultural history.
No, but it's you know, people love looking at people when they were younger.
I know. And look, don't be aware that even when I was doing this stuff, I was kind of going, do you know if I actually make it in the thing I want to do? This is definitely turning up somewhere. This is the clip they will show on Before He... If it goes well for me, then this is the Before He Was Famous clip of me, you know.
So were all of those things sort of to allow you to do comedy?
No, they were a day job, to be honest, because there aren't that many gigs, particularly in the mid-90s. There were like 4 gigs, 6 gigs maybe in the country. So you get to do a bit of stuff. Yeah, you needed a day job. So Echo Island is very much a day job. And it's also a case of it takes a bit of nerve to go, well, I'm going to be a comedian. It really took a bit of... So I tried everything. And then after about literally three years, I went into the guy who was running at the time, Kevin Linton, and said, no, I think this is, I think it's time to concentrate on that. I'm getting enough gigs now, which is a natural way it works, actually, in comedy. You get enough gigs that you can dump the office job.
Right. Well, it wasn't really an office job, Darren.
No, but it was the only time I've ever been in an office. It was literally the only time I've had an office job, because there was a building which has since been flattened, like the house in Poltergeist. The building where we made Echo Island and various of the kids' TV.
It was prefabricated.
It's now tarmac. Tarmac over.
Yeah.
And like no memory. There's no blue plaque. There's no kind of Heritage Ireland OPW Interpreter Centre.
In that same building was the building where Mike Murphy was on one side of the corridor with his office, and the late Gay Byrne was on the other side, and that's where that sort of friendly rivalry started.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's back in the day.
Oh, that is before, because they gave them actually bricked up office by the time we got it.
But of course, the important thing is that you had your show really in your back pocket when you headed over to London, you know.
Oh, look, and Echo Island was at the top of it when I was going in. When I was going in to have a good news for you and these people, I said, what do you need, lad? Someone who's worked with the cockatoo. Someone who's dealt with...
What was the cockatoo's name?
Rocco. Rocco was the name of the cockatoo. Someone who's there when Pete the Vet discovered either a flea or a mite live on camera and said, oh, look, here's a flea. And just out of shot, the mother was furious, livid. They said, oh yeah, we'll deal with the other dogs. But look, there's a flea. Get the camera in close so we have to look at the dog's flea while some woman who'd driven up with the dog.
Oh, that's a moment. You see, like, they missed out on reeling in the ears. Come on.
They did. It could all be that.
So back to the job then. Yesterday...
I'm exhausted. I'm absolutely spent. But that's just because I'm going out all week.
Go on. Because we read out an email already. Some poor woman living vicariously through her friend who's living in London, who's been out three times this week. So what did you do then on Monday?
Oh,
then?
Stop it. The Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Honestly, by the time the jab came, I was happy for the break. Surely the most irritating stance would be to go, look, you're lucky you don't have to. It's exhausting going out again. It wears you down. The only thing is it's cold. It's slightly too early to be doing this. Like it's people putting on the brave face who are freezing. There's a lot of really cold people sitting out at the moment going, well, this is fun like we remember it. No, we never did it. We're just, you know, there's a death wish element here of just going out, just catching just a cold, a normal cold, like the, because it's so freezing out. So there was that, but it's as you remember it. It was very pleasant.
They must have loads of heaters now. They knew this was coming.
Yeah, but they're all booked up for months now.
You
book a heated table is one thing, and then there's people outside who just, you know, chance their arm and they get to sit outside and look at the heaters.
Right.
So there's a lot of that going on. So get used to that.
Or you sort of move over.
You snuggle up to them in the heater. Whatever. Yeah. Oh, there's no social distancing now. The heater wins. It's all in the pockets of proximity to the heater. They bring out blankets and stuff.
Right.
Depending on where you are, like whatever. But it was more the look, we're doing this and that's a nice thing. But you're not, you'll be out soon. You know.
Not soon enough, people are saying.
No.
You got the jab yesterday and it was an AstraZeneca jab.
It was. I got the AstraZeneca, yeah.
And did you ask or were you told or what way?
This is what we're doing here and that's what you get. I mean, I think it'd be madness if they started telling people.
When you arrived, okay, you were going to take whatever you got, fair enough.
Yes, yeah.
But did they inform you this is the AstraZeneca?
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did, right, okay.
Yeah. And they go in and they tell you this is what it is. There's no quiver in the voice like, hey, look, all we've got is the AstraZeneca. You know, it's not like, look, I know you arrived here, but that's what we've got. There's no element of that, like whatever.
Yeah.
Because I think that while there are people of concerns, in my age group, I don't think it's any concern at all. I think if anything, the AstraZeneca reduces my chances of getting a blood clot. That's the kind of the catch of it at this age. It's significant. It's only when you get younger, I think you can compare relative risks and decide you should be cautious about this. But like for me, no, whatever you've got, look. And we've loads of it though, so I've sent a couple over, okay? Just with a couple, and don't tell your mother, I've sent a couple over, just, that's for you now.
Can I self-administer? I can, yeah.
Actually, it's only a jab in the arm, for God's sake. Ask yourself a few cautionary questions, they do that. And then it only takes a second, you'd hardly feel it. And I said to the woman, will you take a photograph? And Jesus, she shot a reel of them, of me with one arm out, like, you know, I got to do the gun pose.
Yeah. And did you have to think about what you were going to wear before you went, Dara?
Do you know, I put a little T-shirt on underneath.
Yes.
And so they could slip the arm out.
Right.
The glove could be out and I could have the arm revealed. Because it is, the otherwise you're taking the whole shirt off.
Like. Yes.
And then I posted a picture of what is a relatively hairy arm I had. I got a thing from Brian O'Driscoll going, oh, you're a fan of the sweat catcher, are you? Which frankly is...
Is the T-shirt, is it?
The smaller, slightly tighter T-shirt underneath.
Right, it's a sweat catcher. I'd never heard that expression before.
They are now.
Now, seeing as you are, and we've said it before, and you are a science communicator, and I suppose communicating science is all important in these times we live in. And do you think they're doing a good job? Because you said it already there about risk and benefit and, you know, the stats around that. And
what I ever notice is people who wouldn't be the sort of people who complain about this stuff or are worried about this stuff all the time complaining. I think there's always going to be the same group of people who just hear the word vaccine and they react to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a useful thing if somebody comes at you and says, oh, but the vaccine, for you to go, well, there are literally seven separate vaccines at the moment, five of them in the West. Currently... I think we're three or four that are in circulation. So when you say the vaccine, they're not the same. They all have a different mechanism. So I'd frankly like you to make six more YouTube videos about why each separate one doesn't work,
yes,
rather than just going the vaccine. Yeah. The because I think that it is, people are bundling them in together. That's the first sign you're dealing with somebody who doesn't, if they just say the vaccine, because they all have a different mechanism, they're done by different things. We've done a few events with people like, you know, the Crick Institute here, where they've talked us through, look, this is what it's doing, they're all the protein spikes and the whole thing. But unfortunately, you know, I think there's a very loud vocal minority, but the figures are here is 95%, 93% of right. take up.
So there's no vaccine, and there's no huge vaccine hesitation in the UK, right?
No, there isn't. It's been enormously uniform, very positive about the whole thing. I mean, there's some kind of their greater problem is kind of there may be a cultural issue with what are known as BAME communities,
yes,
and the term is changing,
yeah,
who have a greater level of skepticism about it, and yeah, so there's a bigger no, reach for that.
But that's interesting there, because those people, those groups would question authority in general. That happens. We had an amazing lady on, I can't remember her name. She's written a book called Stuck, which is worth a read, about vaccine hesitation. She actually wrote it before all this happened, but it was only published about 6 months ago. But that's the thing, that it's sometimes, well, most often, it's not as simple as questioning the medicine. It's questioning the whole system around the medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. The only bit that makes this more of an issue is that they are also the communities most at risk from the actual disease,
yes,
itself.
Yes,
and
yeah,
that is why it is critical. Like, I mean, when it was definitely that it was a case that it has affected particular communities or whatever. I couldn't get the exact, but they would certainly, it is a thing that had to be addressed because it doubles the imbalance.
Yeah.
That they're most likely to actually get a negative effect from it, as well as be skeptical of taking the thing itself. But yeah, you know, there are claims and complaints about, but it is reassuring the way that it is, and it does seem to be working from what we can gather.
Yeah.
In terms of the numbers of people of past a certain age and the take up, and the fact that it lessens the seriousness of conditions when people actually arrive at hospital, if they even do that. Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, it's all good. It's all positive.
It's all pretty good.
And is that positivity palpable in London?
Yeah, hugely. Yeah, there's a real sense of having gone through two or three lockdowns, there's a sense of this might be it. You know, people's greater fear is that there'll be a different variant.
Yeah.
And then it'll be something, either an Indian variant or a Brazilian variant or whatever will come through, because there are spikes appearing in France and Germany as well at the moment. But in London particularly, there is a sense of they've actually, and I would be the first to criticism, done this pretty well, mm-hmm, and got the vaccine. I mean, like, they've been as hypocritical about vaccine nationalism as anyone has, you know, and they've been very quick to complain about the EU, even though they've literally not let any vaccines out of the country here. But there is a sense on the street, which is where we are these days, that a sense of like this could be it, this could be us, yeah, out of this,
which is great.
And even though there may be a return of it, there may be an element of having to get a booster of this again late in the year, or it may never fully go, and it'll just end up being passing through our systems year after year after year in slightly different forms. This most severe phase of it, the feeling is, and there other people will speak with more information, is that this is a step stepping out of it now.
And talking to your science buddies, is it called the Crick Institute?
Crick Institute was the thing we did the last event with, yeah.
Okay. What about the future? Do they reckon that this is going to change how we live in a substantial way?
No. I think they say that it'll be a bit like the flu vaccine is now, that there'll be variants and they'll keep track of variants the way they keep track of flu variants, and that there may be a need for more at-risk communities to have a jab in the way that they have a flu vaccine now anyway.
Right, yeah.
So that's it. Because the Spanish flu, for example, just carried on, but found a kind of the format it varied into became one that we just became able to live with.
Okay.
And so that happens with a lot of these things, that they will return, but it won't be lockdown seriousness, the kind of the thing that we've had for the last while. We'll just, you know, we will top up intermittently as different variants
and move on,
and then they'll just do like they do the flu, where they'll have an international network of, well, which is this year's dominant variant.
Right. Have you stopped the homeschooling? Are the children back to school?
All gone. They're all back at school.
Brilliant. And how does that feel?
I don't even check how they're doing anymore. don't even check how they're getting on. I feel they've got a solid dose of schooling, and frankly, that should keep them for a while.
Right.
It has been the greatest. Honestly, because you know, you can't do anything. You can't. It's really noticeable. The schism in comedy is a good example of this, like whatever, between, I remember saying this to Deirdre O'Kane, going, geez, I'm looking at these young lads doing videos and TikToks and all the stuff they're doing.
Sketches
they're piling
and that,
loads of stuff out. Yeah, and it's great. And like, you've got this new generation of Irish young comics. I was talking about them on Twitter today, who are doing all this stuff, like brilliantly edited packages. And she said, they have no kids. They're not doing any of schooling. They're like all the time in the world to be doing this.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are we supposed to be doing? Like, suddenly learning how to TikTok at 8 o'clock at night? Won't be doing that. And so it was like an iceberg broke, and the young ones went off and created an amazing stuff. And the older ones went, sure, this is what retirement is like. I'll get a hobby.
We'll be
now.
Fine.
And
your hobby is, because we spoke about it the last time, you'd just got delivery of a brand new telescope.
And I've probably got two more since then. You know what? I've gone mad with it. It's as much the deliveries. It's much the ding dong and the somebody there in the middle of the lockdown. If you took the deliveries away, I don't think I'd be.
It's addictive. It's addictive. It is addictive. You know.
It's very Moorish. All right, just having the look. We run to the door. Who's this one for?
So just like a five euro cable or something like that. You know, just to get the guy.
Oh, stop it! Listen, it was a thing we had on the it was on Mock the Week. It was one of my life moments of Mock the Week in the last series about how just the. It was something about, like, I arrived, like, it was like a Southern dame at the door, and, oh, who has come to my door delivering a parcel? And it was like, because they would deliver the parcel, and then they would step back, and then you would check the parcel. Oh, let me check the parcel, Mr. Amazon. And then, but the line I think they didn't include was me going, oh, it is a USB to USB-C cable. How did you know that is what I wanted?
Essential, though, essential. In the times we live in.
Oh, stop it all. Thank you for bringing this adapter to me. Anything you can rip the packaging off.
Yeah. So you mentioned Mock the Week there. It's coming back in May, I believe.
It comes back in May, yeah. We had an interesting moment again. Like, not as if Twitter is a mark of anything, but somebody posted a kind of angry tweet because they're showing repeats of last November's, which is common enough they show it, right?
Yeah.
But since last November to here, it's astonishing how much stuff has aged. It is that old rule of, like, the most contemporary thing is the quickest thing that ages. And we were speaking about a world that just doesn't exist anymore. Even the phases of lockdown are so totally different that if you tuned into one of the old shows, we'd be talking about tier 3 versus tier 4.
Yeah.
Language we don't even use about this stuff anymore. There will be a reeling in the ears about 2020 that you will stare at and go, what? They'll have to do like a series of them, one for each lockdown, one for the middle bit of lockdown, where the public messaging suddenly changed and it was a totally different thing, and it was all suddenly hands, face, space, then it was be alert, then it was something else. So we were talking about the vaccines in a kind of we're taking the mickey out of the vaccines, and now the vaccines are the the miracle, and we apparently look really crass.
But isn't it brilliant? Because when it hit last March, people were saying 18 months. It's going to take 18 months. All the best minds in the world are saying it's going to take a year and a half to develop a vaccine. And we haven't even gone through that 18 months, and we have it here, and it's working. You know, so that, like, well done to everybody involved
there. There was a lot of very kind of measured talk about it, that there will be a second wave. It will take a while for this to go out, but it will do, the lockdown will do, and that will reduce the number of cases. All these things which have absolutely come to pass.
Yeah.
And yet there'll still be people who go, I had a guy caught at me going, we've done the lockdown, and yet we still have it. And we still have to do another lockdown. And you're going, mate, that's like saying, I did some exercise. And apparently I have to do more exercise. Apparently that's not enough, the one time I did that exercise. The situation was constantly changing. But a lot of what people said was, a lot of the more measured kind of predictions, said, look, this will take some time to get through.
Are you getting a new knee?
We'll be patient.
I was looking at your Twitter there. Your Twitter.
Am I getting a new knee? I'm getting something done, but I have to, I've gone all creaky with the thing that I've had for years. I've always had a shoddy knee.
Had you?
Like, I've been strapped for years. It badly in a comedian's football match in Kilkenny in 2005, and a bit came out of my knee, and I had to push the bit back into my knee and played on like an idiot.
Yes.
And I had to get it opened up and taken out, and the guy said, well, never run on that again for a start, and then at some stage you might have to get it all replaced. So at some stage I might have to, but it's gone. I was basically, the vainglorious part of this is I was on an inflatable assault course on a lake during the summer, and I was jumping off something, following a 9-year-old, I was jumping off something and the leg went under me.
And I had then gone to the doctor who said, I'm sorry, what? And I said, well, I was on an inflatable assault course. And the look of this guy, you've had a 30-year knee problem and you were climbing an inflatable assault course and jumping off. Like, so, at some point.
I suppose the question is then to the doctor or the surgeon, will I be able to climb an inflatable assault course after the surgery?
Well, we already had a thing where I had to pay money to a guy for him to say, no more dancing. No more. I was in Odessa, got with Odessa until 3 in the morning, dancing with Mairead, actually. We went out after a gig.
Mairead Ronan.
And without dancing, Mairead Ronan. And then I ended up in the doctor and him going, no, your dancing is done now.
Your dancing days are over.
My heart, actually. That's done now. He said, look, you're fine. You're married. You've had the dance at the wedding. That's it. That's the last time you need to dance.
Now, I know you're a South County Dublin man, but so you may not know about this particular cake. There's a bit of controversy over a cake today, cake controversy. But it's a sort of a thickly sort of squashed up cake with dried fruit and pastry on either side. It's like a small brick. And weighs the same. A very dense cake. Have you any memory of that?
Yeah. Well, like what? Like a wedding cake or a Christmas cake?
No. It'd be sort of like a bun, you know, it'd be a single serving type thing, not as opposed to a cake.
Oh, okay.
But it comes as a square. Any memory, no.
And how did it become controversial, this cake?
No, because Roisin, she got a flash of it. I don't know what she was doing at the time, but she got a flash of this cake from her childhood, and then she googled it and couldn't find a name for it. Now we've had numerous suggestions: Gourd cake, Chester cake, fruit slice, donkey gudge.
I heard donkey gudge. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So they're all there. You've no memory of anything like that.
No. I was never a fruitcake person.
Why not? No.
What was your bun of choice? Thing is, there was, do you remember that caramel thing that is like a flan or whatever? That's, what is it gone? It's like that.
Banoffee.
Oh, that thing that you'd make upside down and you'd, it was a caramel taste. It was like a wobbly thing. Oh, I'm not describing this well at
no,
all.
No, you're not. For a man who's good with words. Knock him off science and current affairs and he can't. Yeah.
was that thing?
Look, they'll come up with it. They'll come up with it. It's an upside down caramel something. Right. Love, Dara. Thanks for making me laugh. Go on.
No, it's okay. I'm just going to flail more trying to remember the movie cake. No, I don't. I don't know this cake. I'm afraid I can't.
And Margaret's been on as well. Really enjoyed this interview with Dara, making me smile. And we all need a smile. So, Mock the Week's coming back in May and then gigs whenever they can.
Back in May. We're going to start with car gigs here, and then we'll start. Then we'll go into socially distanced gigs and hope it'll evolve into normal shows. And then again, we have some mad plan of going back and being back in Vicar Street with a new show in November. Who knows?
Right.
Mm. Dates have come and gone. We've had imaginary fictional tours that have been booked in and disappeared for the last year and a half.
How would you feel, Darrow Breen, if the man at the door in Vicar Street was stopping people for a vaccination passport? There you go.
See, I know, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel my crowd would have all gone and got the vaccination anyway. I don't get a massive anti-vaxxer crowd, to be honest with you, kind of. So I think of all the events, I think I'd very much get the pro-science people going, of course.
No worries on that front then. Dara, great talking to you. Thanks for making us laugh. Somebody's saying,
and good luck to everybody there.
A cream caramel or a creme brûlée?
Creme caramel.
There you go. Well done. See, they're very good. They're very good on their cakes. Thanks, Dara. See you. Talk to you soon. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.